This is Cashflow Ninja. My name is MC Lobster. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode on the Cashflow Ninja and spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me. I've got a fantastic show for you with another fantastic guest, someone that I've known for a while now that I'm pretty excited to have on. Before we jump into today's show, all of our resources, tools, community information, and our programs are available along with over 750 podcast episodes at cashflowninja.com. Cashflowninja.com. And if you find what we do valuable here and you appreciate the content that we're putting out, please like, please comment, please share. We're trying to reach as many people as we can during this time to help them achieve self-reliance through education. So please help us spread the word. My guest today is Dennis Shapiro. Dennis is an investor. He's an author. He's a networker. He's an entrepreneur. Dennis, thank you so much for coming on the show and welcome.
Thank you, MC. Longtime listener. So this is an absolute pleasure actually being on. So thank you so much, MC.
Awesome. Yeah, I love it when I have listeners that started years ago listening to the show and have achieved amazing things in their life eventually come on the show and share their journey. So excited to jump into this, but for folks that don't know about you and what you do, can you please share a little bit about your background and journey with them?
Sure. So I started investing back when I was 14 years old. My older brother gave me a copy of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and he was hooked. He's like 8 years older than me. And we have like a family where if you find something that's good, you kind of like brainwash the other family members to kind of see the light, sort of. So my brother read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He gave it to me. And at that time, at 14, I just didn't understand the book. Like I understood it, but I didn't understand the significance, the importance of having that mentality. So I actually hated the book. I thought it was more of a scam than anything. Years later, I reread the book like 100 times and I was like, wow, this book is great. But at that time, I remember reading it and I was like, wow, this is, I think this is a scam. But the one thing I did take out of the book was, hey, I need to, you know, actually invest in assets. And at that time, I think I was working a part-time job scooping ices and ice cream. I remember I saved my first $1,000 and I invested in a mutual fund. And I remember I watched for the whole year and I was waiting to be rich. And, you know, the whole year went by and I think I made like $7, which was like the price of the commission at the time. And I was like, okay, I need, there's got to be a better way. So then I started looking into the more traditional routes, the Peter Lynch's, the Warren Buffett's. And I went to college with the impression of like, hey, I'm going to be a stockbroker or manage portfolios. But unfortunately, I went in right at the time of the global financial crisis. Being in New York City, that kind of derailed my dreams of, I guess, going into the traditional side of equity management. And I ended up, I looked around, I said, what should I do next? So I was like, all right, let me go get my MBA. So I went and got my MBA. Then I got recruited for my job with the government. And the first paycheck that I got with the government, I looked and I said, wow, it's great that they're not only my employer, they're also my business partner because of the amount of taxes they were taking. So that kind of got me in the whole alternative investment world where I started looking around and I was like, what is the easiest way to, what is the most legal easy way to pay less taxes? And that's when I kind of stumbled onto real estate. And since then, I've been investing in real estate. Then I went on to note funds and ATM funds and life insurance policies. And I've just built up a whole portfolio of alternative assets while kind of getting better with traditional assets at the same time. I didn't actually abandon one when I switched over to the other.
Gotcha. And you mentioned something about the FIRE movement too and how that impacted you and played a role. Some listeners might not be familiar with that. So maybe if you could talk a little bit about that and how that changed your view or your approach and your paradigm.
Yeah. So I remember I was working an overtime shift at my job. We have like a communication system and I was talking to someone that I actually started working with and I was like, you know what, this kind of sucks. You know, we're on our sixth day, we're approaching 60, 70 hours this week. I'm like, what do you like, have you ever looked into like, hey, you know, have you ever had a number in mind of what it will take for you to leave your job? And we were only in our jobs, I would say 5 years at that time. And I remember she was really smart. She was a lawyer that somehow ended up working for the government. And she told me, she's like, well, it's a coincidence. I just had this conversation with a buddy of mine from school. And she sent me the name of the blog. It was Mr. Money Mustache at the time. And I remember reading it when I clocked out of work. And I think I spent like the next 3 days. I think I had one of my best friend's weddings that weekend. But I think literally Monday through Friday, I read like 1,200 posts. And what I got out of it was you didn't need as much as you actually thought you needed. And that's a life-changing moment. When you're like, oh, I need X amount to retire. And then when you realize it's half of X or like a tenth of X, that just changes you. That motivates you, that energizes you. And I spent a couple of years on that rabbit hole. The issue that I ended up having with the FIRE movement is it's kind of too much tunnel vision. It's like this, okay, you're gonna race to the point where you could stop working your 9 to 5, but no one tells you what happens after you get out of that tunnel. So a lot of people are like, well, yeah, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to travel and I'm going to, you know, catch up on my Netflix queue and I'm going to spend time with family. I'm going to homeschool my kids. What happens is that's great. They do some traveling and then they're home. They watch their Netflix queue and then they're done. They're going to garden, but then, you know, fall comes around and then they hate homeschooling. They realize that it's actually better to send the kids to have a social life and everything like that. And then they look around and they say, well, my job was actually a huge part of my social life. And then there's a problem because the stuff that you plan for, it wasn't as critical as the next.
Yep.
So that was my big thing with the FIRE movement. It was really great to have that accomplishment of getting to a position where you could leave your job.
Yep.
But the whole, what are you going to do next is not really talked enough in the movement.
It's true. And that brings up such a good point because the one thing, like you said, is that I love that there's a way to intentionally look at things, like what do you actually need? And this is very important because this will be different for everyone, right? And that's good. That's the positive part of it because then you can intentionally plan your life based on what you need. But then the exit strategy is what? To retire, you know, and we've talked about it on the show that it's, you know, the whole concept of retirement is just a marketing ploy. You know, it was a lot of fluff that was sold. And when folks eventually do that, how many Mai Tais can you drink, sit at the beach and watch your Netflix queue? Then they're like, now what? Now what I do? So the whole thing, and I think it's important for our listeners too, to think about this is, you know, building a life by design and doing what you love to do and creating your life intentionally and getting the money taken care of, that part of it allows you to then live the life that you want to live intentionally. So it's a lifestyle by design and you could do what you love forever. You don't have to stop doing that. You know, I don't think I'm ever going to stop to talk to interesting people and successful folks such as yourself, because I love doing that. I don't want to retire from this and create other content and so forth. So I think that's like the big thing is the juice worth the squeeze? Is the game worth winning? Create a game that you want to win and have the juice be worth the squeeze, because sometimes, unfortunately, people find themselves in a situation where they had this idea and all of a sudden they get there and they're like, oh, this was kind of not what I expected. So yeah, the whole myth of retirement, you know, retires to be put out of use. So we always said that, you know, people die for a reason. You know, if you look at the studies that have been done, you know, most people just run out of time, you know, their health given, they become ill and so forth. They run out of time. They run out of money. People die because they're broke, believe it or not. People die because everyone else around them dies. You know, they become lonely. It's kind of crazy to see that certain folks live longer. I'm thinking of my grandmother. I mean, everyone she knows has basically passed away, and all the new friends that she's made has passed away. And then the big thing that came out in some of those studies is people die because they lack purpose. Their purpose was taken away from them. And like you said, you know, social, that was their social life was tied to their work, their purpose. They feel like they were doing something and contributing. You take that away from people, you know, now all of a sudden, what do they have to live for? I mean, you can only eat so many bags of Cheetos and watch, you know, your favorite show on Netflix, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about alternative investments. And you have also a multi-asset income fund. So there's different types of asset in that fund. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that and share what that is and how that works. Because folks listening to the show, maybe they've invested by themselves as active investors. Maybe they've done passively turnkey. Maybe they've invested in some syndications. But we see a lot of funds out there and multi-asset funds. So maybe you could share a little bit about that and just how that works for folks that are not familiar.
Sure. So when I designed my income fund, one thing I had in mind was I was a traditional investor for approaching 20 years now. I hate to sound dated when I actually say that. I went through so many different cycles with my traditional portfolio where originally I really had no intentions of becoming an alternative investor. I wanted to have, you know, my brokerage account be able to accomplish two things for me. One, I wanted it to provide the income that I would need if I do retire, if I do decide to pull the trigger to retire. And at the same time, I wanted the portfolio to appreciate without having to actually sell any assets. I have three young kids, 5, 3, and 1. And I didn't like the idea that I would have to sell a portion of my assets every year if I wanted to retire because the income that my portfolio was producing wasn't enough to cover my expenses. So I had this goal and I tried to accomplish this goal traditionally. I tried to buy utility stocks and I tried to buy REITs and I tried to buy MLPs and closed-ended funds and all these different techniques that the professionals, the financial advisor community or whatever the professionals would recommend. And the same thing kept happening over and over again. And this was a period of 20 years of try, fail, try, fail, try, and fail. So the same thing always happened. I would buy it. The yield would be great. I think I'm onto something. But what ends up happening is one market correction and all the yield that I had for 2 years, 3 years, completely wiped out.
Yep.
In a day, in a month, in a week. So I realized that there was this connection. The market's big pro, as a lot of people say, is that it's completely liquid, right? You could sell at any time.
Yep.
Well, unfortunately, that is directly correlates to volatility. And volatility is the killer to yield. That was my big thesis. After 20 years of investing in traditional assets, I realized that volatility kills yield. So how do you get rid of volatility? You got to actually lower the amount of liquidity in your portfolio, which is actually a positive to the alternative side of alternative investments because most of them are private securities and it's much harder to trade hands. So what I was realizing is that my traditional portfolio, if I just put everything in a low-cost index fund, it appreciates just fine. I just have to stop trying to get income out of it because I realized that it's just not designed for that. What I realized is that, hey, if I use 1% of my brain power, I put all my money that I wish allocated to that side of my portfolio to traditional assets, I could be fine and not have to worry. I won't have to keep up with analyst reports because I'm invested in index funds. And then I could move on in my life to actually focus on what traditional assets, in my opinion, can't give you. And that's higher income and lower volatility. So that's where the alternative assets for the last 10 years has played a bigger part of my life. When I started realizing this, first I was doing it more for like tax benefits, but then I started realizing, hey, look at my right side of my portfolio. Instead of treating them as or and treating them as an and situation and saying, well, my right side is very stable. It doesn't really move. You look at what happened during COVID, REITs were down 34%. How much commercial real estate traded hands at that time? Nothing, right? There was this big disconnect where buyers wanted a huge discount and sellers were, things aren't that bad. And there was that discount and nothing was trading hands. So you weren't down 34%, but your REITs were. Your publicly traded REITs, I want to say. So you come through these realizations is that if you set aside a part of your portfolio on alternative assets, you could lower your volatility. And at the same time, you could increase your income because they're usually better yielding plays.
Yeah.
And it'll actually lower the overall volatility of a well-balanced portfolio of traditional and alternative investments. And the other thing that marries the two concepts really, really well is that if you're only spending 1% of your brain power on traditional low-cost index funds, you could spend 99% of your brain power on alternative investments because they require more brain power. Besides what some operators would like you to think, it's not 100% passive. I call it being actively passive. You have to learn certain skills. You have to learn the language of alternative investments, right? You have to learn the language of commercial real estate. You have to network with other investors. You have to learn some basic underwriting where you can tell if the assumptions that are being used by the operator is actually conservative or not. So there's all these different things that you do need to start to spend time on if you want to be a successful alternative investor. So by marrying the two concepts, you could have a well-balanced portfolio. So what I came to this realization is when I was starting my income fund, I was like, hey, I had all these failed attempts on the traditional side. What product would I have wanted at that time to simplify my life? And what I realized is I just wanted a low volatility income fund. So that's exactly what I designed. And what I realized by investing in so many different alternative investments, I knew that certain alternative investments complement each other better than others. So I didn't want to become a jack of all trades where you peek underneath my fund and you'll see 55 different types of assets. So I was very careful. Most of the assets in my fund are commercial real estate. So it's apartment buildings, self-storage, mobile home parks. They're all related to each other, where if you really know how to analyze an apartment building deal, you'll know how to analyze a self-storage deal, at least from the passive side, not from the operator side. And what I realized is that even in the alternative space, there's distinct pros and cons. For example, if you invest in apartment buildings, there's usually a wind-up period, right? So it's year one, you have to pay for the closing cost, you have to pay for the capex. There's this period where the cash flow is usually very, very low. And then it kind of starts building, treading up until there's a capital event or something like that. But there's a wind-up period, I call it. Now, if you invest in a fund that only does apartment buildings, you'll see a number is like, oh, it's a preferred return of 7-8%. But in reality, it'll take you years to get to the point where that investment's actually yielding you that 7-8%. So that's where if you blend a fund where you have something like apartment buildings, but you also have notes and hard money and ATM funds, which is my favorite. And because their business model is not a wind-up period, their business model is heavy cash flow.
Yep.
So now you have a portion of your portfolio in, you know, very secure commercial real estate that's winding up. And then you have a piece of your portfolio that is cash flowing from the start. And what you end up doing is you're averaging out a really good income that you could kind of rely on from day one. And you're not waiting 2-3 years to get to that point.
Yeah, that's a great, great insight. Providing some balance. And like you said, I like how you position that because, yeah, there's some of them that are positioned purely for tax benefits and massive cash flow, ATMs. And then there's the real estate, like you said, that has a little bit of a wind up. So yeah, no, I like it how you blend those all together in that fund. And it does provide a lot of benefits for folks. What are some of, we've talked about some of the pros for that. What are some of the cons of these multi-asset income funds?
So the cons is, I think, the level that you need to understand and trust the operator. Because on a single deal, right, you have a multi-asset fund versus a single asset fund. The single asset fund, it's easier to look at the business plan. There's less variables going on. Multi-asset funds, now you're not only looking at the, how are the apartment buildings in that portfolio, but you also have to look at the self-storage. So what you're really analyzing is you're really investing with the operator at that point. Because not just the operator, but the person who's running the fund and their ability to select the best operators. So a lot of times fund operators will actually be asset operators themselves at one point.
Yeah.
So a couple of the deals that I invested in, the person was an operator for 20 years and now they're a fund operator because they have the ability to really know if a deal is good or not.
Yeah.
So I think that's the main con is that it does add variables and you have to understand that you're more or less investing in the operator first and then you're investing in the portfolio that they actually are invested in.
No, absolutely. It's interesting how it always comes down to people and relationships, right? So business and investing, it all comes down to that. And you've built a really amazing network for folks that are just starting out. And listening to this and trying to get their foothold and build a network, what advice can you give to some of our listeners on how to build and grow and scale their network?
So the first thing I'll say is that it's not as daunting as it seems. Whenever you start off networking and you're at zero, the good news is if you just add one person to your network, that's a huge return. And then going from one to two is like 100% return at that point. So the good news is it really doesn't take a long time. So the first thing I really recommend for anybody is you go into your LinkedIn portfolio, about LinkedIn profile. If you don't have one, obviously create one and just put the word investor. If you really just want to get into real estate, just put real estate investor in those three lines below. What ends up happening is you're going to get swarmed with these requests to become, you know, hey, network meet with me. And then there's this calendar invite. If you put a real estate investor, you'll get them from commercial brokers, you'll get them from newer operators that are trying to build out their investor list. So what I ended up doing is the first 6 months, 9 months, honestly, I was taking those calls, even though they were providing almost zero value to me. But what it ended up having is 15-minute conversation with people that are in the industry, and I was listening to the terms being used. Now, if there was any term that I wasn't familiar with, I was writing them down. And after the call, I would go, you know, find out what it was. Now, some of those contexts were turned out to be useful. Most of them was, I don't want to use the word spam, but that's kind of what it was. But what it helped me do was actually learn the language, because real estate has a very, very distinct language. Yep. You need to know what cap rates are. You need to know what NOIs are. You need to know what value add is. You need to know basic terms. You don't need to know, unless you're going to go operate, you really don't need to know the whole nine yards, but you need to be able to converse with other people with the basic terms of real estate. So once you have that foothold, then you start going to meetups. And my favorite is conferences. That's actually where we met. I think we met another time at the Mid-Atlantic Conf. Once you're at the conference, it's all about quality and not quantity. So your job is not to go out and give out 1,000 business cards. Your job is to actually have conversations with people, because if they're a flipper and you only really want to invest in syndications, there might be very little connection there. But hey, if you invest in syndications and then you meet someone who also invests in syndications. Now, if you've done two syndications at that point and they've done two syndications, now you guys have something to talk about. Hey, how's your operator doing? You know, what market is he in? Is he a class A or is it a class B or is it class C? How did they do during COVID? Did they stop distributions or not? Now you're able to have a conversation. You know the language. And now you're able to have a conversation, and you only need, I would say, I walked away with my first conference, I think with 5 to 6 valuable connections. Once you have those connections and you have the language, then all you, this is the secret sauce to networking. You put things in the calendar. You say, hey, I had a really good time meeting you at Mid-Atlantic. I know we went over blank, blank, blank. Great tip for that is turn over a business card, jot down some notes, one or two things like, hey, fellow, you know, syndication investor or whatever it is. So you email, you highlight the one or two notes that you took and you said, hey, how would you like to get on a calendar call once a quarter with me? And we could start next Monday, or we could start, you know, on August the 7th. You do it far enough in advance where they don't really feel like it's too much of a hindrance to say yes now. It gets on the calendar. And then what ends up happening is every quarter, you just catch up. You just say, hey, how did that deal go? How did this deal go? Oh, you're looking for a deal in Charlotte? I actually know an operator who just sent out the thing. How about I connect you two? Never expect anything in return. You make the connections, you make the referrals, and it will go from there. It doesn't take more than that. But the trick is never end your email saying, let's stay in touch. Give a date, give a time. Most of the time people will say yes. If they don't respond after a couple of times, no worries. You're not harassing them. You're not, you know, you don't want to put it as like an unsubscribe type of situation. You just stop contacting them. That's fine. Get the hint. But most of the time people respond. Most of the time people want to know what you're seeing in the market. And if you can network with 5 or 6 different investors, that will quickly become 25 in a year. And then that'll become 125 in the year after that. And then you'll get to the point where you're like, hey, I don't need any more people in my network.
Yeah. No, great stuff. And I mean, in the end, like we've already covered, this is what it comes down to. Business is conducted by human beings. Investments are conducted by humans and made by humans with other humans. So, and especially if you're looking at some diversification through multi-asset income funds, then you definitely have to do that. Now, you just finished off a book, the Alternative Investment Almanac. Maybe you could share a little bit insights on the book. What made you write that book and what's covered in that book?
Yeah, absolutely. So this has been a passion project of mine. I think at the end of last year, I kind of got into the idea when I was launching my private equity fund, I wanted an ability to really describe some of the assets that I'm investing in, because some of the assets like ATM funds aren't, when you're talking to an investor, sometimes if they're hearing it for the first time, they're more confused than anything. So I wanted to really give them some material that can really just make it really simple for them. So what I realized is that in these last 9 years or so, the alternative investment world really has taken off. Ever since the Jobs Act of 2012, where the syndication rules on who could syndicate and who can invest and everything like that changed, it has been, you know, exponential growth. So there's been so much growth, but very little, I would say, educational material that's not selling anything or pitching anything. So I wanted to create a book that presents these different assets. Most of them are related, some of them are not, but that presents a high level introduction to that topic and then expert Q&As, like for the one of the chapters I have is infinity banking concept. So I am, you know, I didn't want to write 300 pages on infinity banking concept. You know, you could go and read Nelson Nash for that. So I didn't want to, I'm not going to write a better book on infinity banking concept than him. But what I wanted to do is introduce people to the concept, how it might be used with other alternative assets. And then my favorite part is that I get into expert Q&As with two people who are actually doing this full time. This is their professionals. You know, I think you know who I use for infinite banking concept for the book. And what I wanted, and those Q&As provide so much insight and value. And the best part is, hey, I like the infinite banking concept. Now I have a place to go. Now I have a podcast to go check out. Now I have somewhere to go. And then if I didn't like it, great. The next chapter is on mobile home parks. Hey, that sounds cool. Let me read 20, 30 pages about that and then get into the Q&As. So it's an easy place to go from ATM funds to mobile home parks to self-storage, life insurance settlements, which a lot of people are not aware of, that I think is an extremely interesting topic, you know, infinite banking concepts and even startup tech fund at startup tech. So there's a bunch of cool stuff. Most of it is commercial real estate, but it is varies from all those things that I just mentioned.
No, it's great stuff and was a lot of fun to be a part of that and to be included in that. Now, one habit I've seen from wealthy and successful people is that they're always studying and learning new things. What are you currently studying and what are you currently learning?
Okay, so what I am doing now is I have always been guilty as an investor of looking forward and looking ahead. So I always was like, well, you know, I'm planting the seeds today. I'm going to harvest tomorrow. And the problem is with that mentality, you always get into this tomorrow mindset. So what I am retraining myself to do is to be much more in the present. A couple of masterminds I'm in, it's just the focus is more about the journey and being present. And a part of that is I'm reinvesting in a lot of the relationships that are in my life. So I spent 2-3 years creating this great business network and everything like that. And what I realized is that it's too easy sometimes to overfocus on that and lose the personal relationships that you do have. So what I am repurposing myself this year is now that my fund is launched and my book is launched is to really, really improve the relationships in my personal life.
Awesome. Fantastic stuff. Now, Dennis, a core message in our show is to leave our families, communities, and the world better than we found it by passing down a mindset, values, and principles to future generations, not just money. So if you cannot pass on any money to future generations and we're only allowed to pass on 3 principles to them to build wealth and achieve happiness and success, what would they be?
So 3 principles. So one is work hard, regardless of who you are. And someone is always, I remember I was in high school, I was playing, I think varsity basketball. And there was this quote where, well, if you're not on the court right now, your competitor is. So the concept of if you really want to get good at something, it's not a mystery. It's time and effort. So working hard is definitely the first thing. The second thing is just learning how to save. That's always come easy for me from a frugal mindset. But now I look at my kids and I wouldn't want to be in their shoes. I think it's learning how to be frugal and learning how to save is such an important skill. And I almost had that skill kind of thrown in at me by being an immigrant, you know, at 3 years old coming to this country. It was very easy to save when you look in the kitchen and there's, you know, condiments as your entrees type of situation. But I'm now looking at it and I'm like, wow, my kids have everything. You know, we're not, you know, they don't have a silver spoon, but it's much more difficult for them to save. So I would want to make sure that there's a balance for that so that they could save. And then the third thing is learning how to leverage. My favorite thing, I think, in this world, in the investing world, not in this world, the investing world is the power of collateral, of collateralizing an existing asset to create another asset. I think that was one of the big takeaways I think I took from you when you did your presentation at the Mid-Atlantic Conference. Is the point is, if you're going to buy that asset anyway, why not create the asset in between as your middleman? And I think those are the three most powerful things. So work hard, save, and then learn how to collateralize assets.
Fantastic. Where can my listeners and viewers learn more about you? Where can they follow you? And where can they stay informed of all the many projects that you're involved with? And where can they get a copy of your book, The Alternative Investment Almanac, Expert Insights on Building Personal Wealth in Non-Traditional Ways?
So my book can be easily found on Amazon if you just search Dennis Shapiro or The Alternative Investment Almanac. That's really the easiest way to get it. In terms of staying in touch with me, if you go on www.sihcapitalgroup.com, you can get a free abridged version of my book. If 300 pages sounds a little bit too much, there's a 30-page version, and that's for free if you just sign up to my email list. And I also have educational content of over 30 articles last time I checked, just everything from apartment building syndications, misconceptions in the syndication world, everything that you really need from a passive investor side of how to evaluate deals. Everything can be found on sihcapitalgroup.com.
Fantastic stuff. Dennis, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your journey and your knowledge and providing so much value for all of my listeners and my viewers.
Thank you, MC, for having me. This is an awesome, awesome pleasure of being here.
Good stuff. And thank you so much for spending your most valuable resource, your time, with me again on the show. Again, please check out all of our resources, tools, and programs at cashflowninja.com. And if you find what we do valuable here, please share it around and spread the word. We're trying to reach as many folks to help them become self-reliant through education. Until next time, live infinitely.